Tiron San, eh? How are you all today? Wonderful. Okay. So before we start the sermon, let's bring our palms together in veneration to the perfect one, the one who showed us the path to the ultimate liberation, the one who, on one day, at the feet of Lord Buddha Deepankara, said no to his own salvation, and who thought of all sentient beings, and thought of everyone, including us, everyone in this world, and thought that it's either my salvation, so he was given the offer, whether it's your salvation, just to listen to a four-line stanza, or you can think of all sentient beings and then jump back into samsara and then spend your life more in samsara, and then you can think of all the other salvation. At which point he thought that it's not my salvation, I need to think about all sentient beings, and then jump back into samsara when he had the chance to become an Arithunuhanse, to attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana, to free himself once and for all by just listening to a four-line stanza. So it is in his holy name that we make this veneration. So let us bring our palms together to pay our homage to the supremely enlightened Lord Buddha. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. So, if you have a door that is open, not fully open, right? Try my best to draw a door. So let's say this is the door. Does this look like a door? Okay. So these are hinges. If there's a door like this, what do you call this door? Is the door half open or is it half closed? Half closed. Half open. So this is water, and this is a glass. Is this container half full or half empty? Half full. Now, since you all listen to them, you're giving me the the optimistic view, the positive view. So, is this half open or half full or half empty? Is this half open or half closed? So there are always two ways of seeing the same thing, the same event. This is either you can see half empty or half full. This you can say you can think either it's half open or half closed. So today morning as well, when I was brushing my teeth, I saw there was a gecko, you call them, right? So there was a gecko without its tail. So geckos, they lose their tail when at a sight of danger, right? So they drop it to escape from danger. So the predator just goes after the tail without going after the gecko. So they do that. So I was telling Swami Nahansa, so we are having a discussion about that, and then we were talking about that. So the gecko, we were talking about what might the gecko be feeling. The gecko would always feel, I don't know whether geckos feel or something like that, or they could think of the events that happens, but if let's say for the example that they can think, right? So the gecko might always feel that I have lost my tail. I don't have a tail now. What should I do? I have to wait till another tail grows back. I don't have a tail now. And his life, he would spend it very sadly because he doesn't have a tail. And also he would always think that if I were to have a tail, I would perform in my life very well. I would live a very good life if I were to have a tail. I mean, maybe not you today, but not only today, but now you have understood the Dhamma, but haven't you seen people like that? They always think about the future, and they always think about all the things that they don't have, and think that if I were to have this, I would have done this great. If I were to have a good teacher, I would have performed in my school very well. I would have had good grades. If I had lots of money, I would have lived a very comfortable life. I would have lived a great life. I would spend my life very well. Haven't you seen people like that? They always go around boasting, saying things like that, because this is the excuse that they make. Because they feel that the glass is half empty. If the glass was full, but they fail to see that the glass is always, it's half full already. It's half full. It is the same event that you look at and then think that in two different ways. You look at the glass and then go like, it's half empty. If it was half full, I could drink the whole thing and quench my thirst. So they go like that. If it was half full. If it was full completely. So this is a way of thinking about the events that happens in your life, ladies and gentlemen. Because it is the same event that we have to look at. We can either see that event in a negative way or a positive way. But the more we look at that event in a positive way, we tend to feel motivated in our lives. We tend to feel that we could go towards a goal. We tend to feel that we can achieve something in life. But when we see that the glass is half empty, then we start thinking about all the different things, all the different possibilities, that if it was half, if it was full, then I could have done this, but now I can't. But you can just do the same thing. Even now, when the glass is half full, you don't need to wait till it becomes full. Because whose actions will make it full? Your own actions. You have to make it full. You have to fill it. You have to fill the glass. No one else will fill your glass. So we all have to fill our glasses. Without just looking at the glass, thinking that it's just half empty, what should I do? And if it was full, I would have done this. So I'll relate an anecdote to you all. So when we were in the UK, we went down one day for a trip. We went down. So in our family, I had my father and my mother and my sister. So all four of us, we used to travel a lot. When we have free time, we used to travel. So we traveled from Inverness, which is in Scotland, Inverness to Birmingham. So it was like around 400 kilometers, as I can remember. So without stopping, not like without stopping for a break, without stopping in the sense, without stopping for a night, we traveled directly from Inverness to Birmingham. So we stopped for breaks in different locations, but then we continued traveling. So when we were traveling, when we were reaching Birmingham, it was like around midnight, and we weren't actually acculturated with the environment in England. So because Inverness is a countryside in Scotland, so that was like the city side, and it was very urban, and we weren't very acculturated to that place. So we didn't know the things that happened in and around Birmingham. So there was a huge traffic jam. All the lanes were filled, all of them. So we could hear the sounds, I mean, not the sounds of phones, but because it's not loud. Unlike in Sri Lanka, when you're in a traffic jam, all you could hear is the sounds of people honking. So not that. So, but we could see all the parking lights on, and the cars were jammed. They were in a traffic jam. But there was one lane which was free. No one went in that lane. That lane was very free from this end to the other end of the bridge. So it was free. So then my dad got a brilliant idea. He thought of other people thinking that, why aren't these people using this lane? It's free. No one's in that lane. We could just go in that. And then he put his car, to that lane, excuse me, and then rode in that lane to the other side. Nothing happened. No police, nothing. And then we went to our destination, and then we went to our trip, and then we returned home. So when we returned home, so I was the first one to enter the house. When we returned home, I took the keys and then unlocked the door and then entered the house. So I saw a parcel on the floor. Not a parcel, but like an envelope. And then it had something like a big document. And then I took it as well. And then everyone came in. And then I thought of opening it later. But then suddenly I thought that, I'll just open it now. And then I opened it to see that the number plate of our car was on a picture on that envelope. So not on the envelope, but in the letter. And then it read that, "You have traveled in a bus lane. And please go to this website." So there was some more description and a documentation about the rules. "And please go to this website to make your payment." Because they were charging when you travel in a bus lane in the peak time. So this bus lane was never allowed to use for other vehicles. And so I don't think that it had an off-peak time. So that's why no one was traveling in that bus lane. Because it was a bus lane. But we didn't know it was a bus lane, and there weren't any visible signs because it was night as well. So then my dad put the car onto that lane, and then we went to the other side. But the point that I want to emphasize here is that when we saw that letter, what do you think we thought? We thought that if there's any way to not pay this, we would try our best to do that, because I think it was a very big fine. I can't remember the exact numbers, but it was a very big fine for traveling in bus lanes. So you don't do that again. And you remember that lesson for your entire life. I mean, it had its effect, right? Because his son also remembers it. So that method has an effect. I can tell that. So then we thought of thinking of a way to escape this, to excuse ourselves out of this, excuses.com from Dasandru. So that's how he did a sermon about excuses, right? So then we went to the website, so with another gentleman who was also one of my dad's friends, and he was living in the UK for a while, and then we told him as well, and then as soon as we told him, he told us that there's no way to escape this. But then my dad said that there should be some way. Let's just go to the website and see. And as soon as we visited the website, the first things, so we could make an appeal. We could make an appeal to say that, so either an excuse or an appeal, so to excuse ourselves out of the fine. But as I remember, the first thing it said was that you can make an appeal without these points. So if you are going to include these points, then you can't appeal using these points. The first thing it said was that I'm not from this country, which is the first thing I think my dad was going to type in. The second thing it said was that I don't know the rules. So you can't make an appeal like that. And then it had few different other points, but none of those points, we were going to actually say those points. We were going to make the appeal using those points, but it didn't work. So we had to pay anyway. But then at that time, my dad and, I was also involved in the not the payment, but I was also involved in going to the website and paying the fine. And therefore, I was very sad about it, that we had to pay it. But we had to pay it anyway. Why be sad about it? I mean, if there is something that we have to do anyway, then what is the point in being sad about it? It is looking at the glass, it's half empty. When you look at the glass thinking that it is half empty, then we become sad about the things that we have to do anyway. Just think about brushing your teeth. You have to do that anyway, in the morning and night, and maybe after lunch. You have to do that. You have to do that anyway. But if you go like, oh no, I have to brush my teeth every day, then since you have to do it anyway, you have to do it. But since you're regretting over it, you're being sad over it, therefore, I mean, you live that time in a sad mood. What is the point? If you have to do it anyway, then be happy about it. It's like Nayakandru refers to paying tax. You have to pay tax anyway. But don't ever think that I have to pay tax. Why do these people do that? I mean, every time that someone tries to pay tax, I've seen most people, they talk about tax in a very negative way. But if you think about tax in a way of giving, then you earn merits out of it. That is seeing the same event as the glass is half full. You have to pay the tax anyway. And if you think about tax in a positive way, then you earn merits out of it. That is how to think about the events that happens in your life. When you think about the events that happens in your life in a positive sense, then all the time, you can be a very happy person. I mean, this is the same thing that even our teachers back then, the Arhatun Mahanses, thought. I mean, we have heard of the story that one day, one Arhatun Mahanse was going to visit a place. I can't remember his name exactly. I think it was, in the books it said, Sunaparanta. So he was going to visit this Sunaparanta place, and when you go to visit somewhere, leaving your home place, which is your monastery or the temple, you seek permission from your teacher. So at that time, the Lord Buddha was dwelling in that place, and then he went to the Lord Buddha and then asked, "Venerable sir, I'm going to visit this place to spread the Dhamma, to spread these teachings, to spread the truth." And then he asked the Lord Buddha, "Shall I go? I want your permission." And then the Lord Buddha said, don't go to that place because the people there are very dangerous. They can scold you. They can yell at you. Then the Swaminhanse said that although they yell at me, although they scold me, although they blame me, they don't hate me, would they? So I will be going to this place, Lord Buddha. May I seek your permission? And then the Lord Buddha says, what if they hit you? What if they physically hurt you? And then the Swaminhanse says, although they physically hurt me, they wouldn't kill me, would they? So I can spread my teachings. I can spread the teachings of the Lord Buddha. So this is how they thought. So the Lord Buddha was trying to give him a test. He was testing this Swaminhanse. And then he was thinking that, let's see what he thinks. I mean, of course, the Lord Buddha knows that or what this Swaminhanse's mindset is, but because he stated that explicitly, today we have a story to talk about, right? So, I mean, that's how I feel that about the things that had happened in the past, in the discussions that went along with Lord Buddha and Venerable Sariputta, the Lord Buddha and Venerable Moggallana, because the Lord Buddha doesn't need to actually ask these questions from an Arithunvahanse, right? Because anyway, the Arithunvahanse's mindset is to accept anything. So he doesn't necessarily need to ask these questions, but he asks these questions out of compassion. Because then we have a character, we have a story to look up to. Then it shows us a destination for us to go towards. So then, likewise, our teachers back then, even back then, they thought on the same lines. If they blame me, although they blame me, they might not hit me. Although they hit me, they might not kill me. So I'll be going to this place to spread the teachings, to spread the truth. This is how all the Swaminhanses, the Arithunvahanses back then thought. So this is the inspiration that our teachers had taken from them and then have passed it down to us. And keeps on passing down to many generations to come throughout the noble lineage. So this is a way of thinking of all the events that happens in your life. It is a positive way of thinking. The more positive you become, the more positive energy that you attract into your life. When you attract more positive energy, then your life will be very motivated to travel towards a goal, to a destiny that you have, to your definite aim, just like we talked about last week. So you need energy and you need positivity towards your goal. You need to look at the things that happens in your life in a very positive sense. The more you look at that in a positive sense, the more pleasant your mind will be as well. Because you can't go towards a goal thinking that, having doubts about it, thinking that whether this will work or not. It's really hard to travel on that path when you have that goal. When you have a mindset like that, it's really hard. So the more you have a positive mindset, the more you have a very optimistic mindset. Is that the right word? Yes. Optimistic, right? Optimistic mindset. You'd be traveling towards your goals very fast. Then you'll be accelerated towards your definite aim, your goals in life. So you have to see the world as in a very positive sense. The glass is always half full. When you come across the toll road that you have to pay anyway to travel in the road, then you have to pay it. You have to pay to that road anyway. So we shouldn't be thinking about that. We shouldn't be thinking that why do these people charge for a road? It's just a road. It's just a place that we have to travel. It's just a route that we have to take. Without thinking like that, we can think that we had to only pay this much to travel in this road. We had to only pay this much. Let's say just 50 rupees, if it's in Sri Lanka. Just 50 rupees. You have to only pay 50 rupees to travel in the road. And then, let's say you go to you go to the shop or a supermarket and then buy something. When you buy something, then let's say it costs a lot, but you have to buy it anyway. I mean, this is not to say that to search for the cheapest shop, right? The place to buy to the lowest price. This is not to say that, but this is to say that to look at the events that happens in your life in a positive sense. Like, you shouldn't be going to the most expensive place and then buying the most expensive things. I mean, in the sense that if there's a cheaper option available, then go for that. But what I'm saying is that in the events that happens in your life, don't try to see the negative side of it, because every event has a positive and a negative side, most of the events. But since our mindset, we tend to look at the negative side of most things. That is how we are trained. That is how we were trained. So because when people get together, what do they discuss about? Not you all, but maybe back in your life before you came across the Dhamma. What do people discuss about when they get together? The good things that happens in the country? Or the bad things that goes around in the country? Or maybe in the world as well? Sometimes even people get together in Sri Lanka and then talk about the politics of the USA. That you should change this president because, I mean, he's not doing great. We're still in Sri Lanka. But they're discussing about the presidents in the USA and the UK. You don't have a president in the UK. But they're talking about the politics of those countries. But is that going to change anything? It's not going to change anything. All you can do is just look that the glass is half full. Because you can't change it either. And you have to live in the way that you live right now anyway. So you can't change anything in this world. So why not see the world that you live in a very positive way? Because this is very important towards Nibbana. Why I say that is because when you see your life in a positive way, you can actually skip across the problems that come into your life, but you can skip across the places where your mind gets very frustrated. Because when your mind is frustrated, you fail to see the truth. You fail to see the truth clearly in your mind. When your mind is frustrated, when your mind is in pressure. So why this happens is because the mind always has an expectation. It always expects something good to happen to the mind. A good experience needs to come to the mind all the time. And that is what the mind expects. Because of that expectation, the mind always thinks that if this happens, then I will be happy. Just think about all the things that happens in your life when you go through all the experience. Always, the mind is backed by an expectation. So, for example, now there's no problem, right? But what if the aircon goes off? What if the light suddenly goes off? What if this place starts? I mean, if the aircon goes off, then what happens is that this place starts heating up. Then? So at that moment, the mind has an expectation. But we feel that, I mean, now there's nothing, we're okay, we are listening to a sermon, and everything's fine. We're going through a very peaceful route. But that is not so. What if your chair suddenly breaks and then you fall to the ground? I'm not saying this should happen, but what if that happens? I mean, can't that happen? That can happen. If the chair is subjected to wear and tear, then the chair could break at any moment. That can happen. Then. So, there are lots of events that can happen in this world. And in each of those events, if we have an expectation in our minds, then that event either becomes favorable or unfavorable. So, if that event matches the expectation that was in the mind, then it becomes a very favorable event. You love it. Let's say, for example, you go to the supermarket thinking that the prices are very high these days, and then you suddenly spot something that you really want to buy, and then it has its lowest price that you have ever seen. Now, what do you feel? But when you start approaching it, and then you look at it, so on the rack it says this amount, and then you take it to your hand, and then you look at the price tag, and then the price tag says something else. What if that's the case? And then a worker comes on and says that, oh, this is the old price on the rack. Sometimes there are boards in Sri Lanka where they actually change so without printing the whole banner, so they display the banners, the price banners in front of shops. So when they do that, so sometimes when the price changes, they either stick something on top of the 100 grams of something, or 1 kilogram of something is 480 rupees, right? So what they do is, without changing the whole thing, because there are other prices on the banner as well. So without changing the whole list, what they do is they change this to, and then they stick a 9 here. So the price has increased. So I can remember when I was little, I used to go and peel that off and check what was before that. Why do you do that? And that's one out of curiosity. But the other is that we don't like this price because it's high. We want to know that whether it was low before. So if it was low, then I'd actually opt for that, but unfortunately, you can't opt for that because now the price is high. But when you see that, let's say we peel this off and then see that there was an 8. So 10 rupees has increased. So if that's the case, then we're very sad, aren't we? Because the 10 rupees have increased and now we have to pay extra 10. But we're not actually paying extra 10, now the price is 490. But when you see that there was an 8 before, then we feel that, why do I have to pay this extra 10 rupees? Now, I'm not just talking about rupees here. I'm talking about all the events that happens in your life. All the expectations that come across in your life. All the events, when they happen, when they occur towards in your life, then if we have expectation inside our minds, we always things become either favorable or unfavorable, according to the expectation. But all the events that becomes favorable, we put it into the good list. All the events that becomes unfavorable, we put it into the bad list. But just think about this. Sometimes the events that may have become unfavorable after time, sometimes they become favorable. Aren't they? So for example, let's say when you were little, you used to play with dolls or toys, or toy cars, whatever, right? But now do you play with them? Now you don't play with them. Well, you do in one sense. But now you don't play with dolls, toys, or any of the small stuff, right? Because you're not a child anymore. But if someone were to give you a toy and then ask you to play with it, then it becomes like a weird moment in time, right? It becomes very weird. It becomes very awkward. And it's not a very favorable situation. So why is that? But when you were little, if someone were to give you a toy, then you'd be very happy about it. You'd praise them and you'd be very happy about it. You'd be very happy about the person who gave it to you. And that is a favorable event back then when you were a child. But now today, it's not a favorable event to you. Because now you don't expect that. You don't want that anymore. Because you don't want that, now it has become a very unfavorable event. So, events in your life, they become either favorable or unfavorable according to the views that you have in your mind. It is always up to you, always up to your views. Always up to your views. When you have a view saying that this event is good, seeing a flower is good, then that is a favorable event if that happens in your life. But if you have a view saying that seeing a flower is bad, let's say, for example, so a magpie. Seeing one is good, right? So seeing one is bad, right? What about seeing two? That's a good event. Three is bad again. So this is the view that we have. Seeing a magpie, if we see only one, then it's a bad event that happens in our lives. But seeing two, it's a good event that happens in our lives. So maybe sometimes I have heard that there are certain people in, if you live in a village, there are some people that you don't actually like to see in the morning. When you see them in the mornings, then something bad happens to your life, to your day. The whole day is, I mean, it's a disaster. And don't you have views like that? But what about that person's, let's say, son? Or their daughter. Let's say it's a mother. What about that person's son or daughter? Seeing their mother in the morning, it's a very pleasant event. So they love that. But for you, it's an unfavorable event. So what I'm trying to explain is that the event brought you the favorable or unfavorable situation? Is it in the event? If it's not in the event, then where is it? The unfavorable situation that you came across. Because we always try to say that we came across this person and then my whole day was a disaster. We try to say that this event occurred in my life and this event brought me sadness. This event brought me grief. This event brought me anger. This event brought me... So we always try to point our finger towards the event. And also, in other events as well, when the events that brings you happiness, so watching the TV brought me happiness. Looking at a flower garden brought me happiness. These events brought me happiness. Going to the mall and buying something, it brought me happiness. Going to the cinema brought me happiness. So all of these events, we tie ourselves with the event and then point towards the event and then say that this event is what brought me happiness or this event is what brought me sadness or grief or unfavorableness or unfavorability, whatever it is. So this event is the one that brought me this. That is what we try to say. But does the event have to do anything with it? If the event has something to do with you feeling something, you feeling sad or you feeling happy about that event, then how come the same event brings happiness to one party and sadness to one party? Let's say you compete in a tournament or something. Let's say, for example, tennis or badminton or cricket, and you win. What is that? What is there for you? When you win, you are happy about it. Let's say you lose. You're sad. But isn't there someone happy? When you lose, they want you to lose. And you want them to lose. And you want yourself to win. They want themselves to win. And the event of them winning, they think that event brings me happiness. And that event brings the other person sadness, grief. And then the other person goes on thinking that if I were to practice more, then I would have won. The glass is half empty, so what should I do? Then you go and tell your mother, and mom, I want to go to more extra classes so I can practice more. I mean, this is not to say not to go to extra classes, but when you start to see the events that happens in your life in a positive way, again, then this is not to say that the expectation wouldn't be there. The expectation would be there. This is actually changing your expectation slightly to be okay with both of the events, to be okay with both of the outcomes. When you are okay with both of the outcomes, then, I mean, the only way to do this completely in a free way, in the sense that the only way to completely achieve this is to get rid of your expectation. We'll talk about that. But first, before getting rid of your expectation, we need to come into a point where we can see the events that happens in our life in a positive way. The only way to completely achieve that is to get rid of your expectation. And then anything that can come to your life, any event that comes to your life, you're okay with that. You accept it. You're okay. Nonetheless, whatever happens, you're okay with it. This is not to say that you're not going to change anything according to the culture, according to the environment that you're living in. This is not to say that, for example, let's say thieves or robbers break into your house. This is not to say that, oh, okay, you see, they're positive. They only have taken this much. They have left the others. They have left the TV. They have left the chairs. So this is not to say that be okay. I mean, you have to be okay with that as well. But this is not to say that not to protect your house after that, not to lock the doors, not to check the windows, whether they are closed or not. Why I came up with the window, because I have good experience of keeping a window open at night and then thieves breaking into our house back then. So that's why I think the window came up. But you should make sure that all of those things are locked and closed. And if you want CCTV cameras up on the walls, then go with it. But what I'm saying is that although you do that, you have to keep in your mind that the only problem in this world is expectation. Nothing else. Not the events, not the experience that you're going through. None of those things are the problem in this world. You have to always focus on your expectation. You have to always bring all the things, all the problems that comes in your life up to that expectation. Up to that expectation in the sense, up to the expectation where you have to show your mind that this is the problem. Because otherwise, what happens is, we always tend to see that the events are the problem. Then we try to change the event. And we hope the next time when we change the event, so we fix CCTV cameras, and then this might not happen. So we might not experience this again. That's why we change it. When thieves break into the next person's house, then we try to secure our house. Because we know the next day, the thieves are going to break into our house. So then we do that, and then we expect nothing to happen. But will that work? That's not going to work. So I was told by someone that recently a famous museum had been robbed as well. I think it was the Louvre. A famous museum was robbed. So even up to that level, the thieves would go. So, securing your house is one thing, but having an expectation not something to happen in your life, it's another thing. That's not going to bring anything favorable or unfavorable into your life. Because it is not the event that brings you something favorable. It is not the event that brings you something unfavorable. It is always the expectation that happens in the mind. Just think about this. No, I'm not going to draw a graph. So I'll call happiness. Pleasure for now. So, in your life, an event comes from this end. Right? When an event comes from that end, you have a view about it. Whatever the event it is. Let's say you meet a person. You have a view about that person, whether this person is a good person or this person is a bad person. Seeing him is good, seeing him or her is bad. You have that view. And when you have that view, what happens is you want it. Because this is what you expect. So wanting or expectation, this is what you expect. So you expect that event to happen in your life, which is the favorable part, the good thing. But then let's say the person who came across to you or you met is in your bad list. And then what happens to your expectation? So, because of your expectation, what did you come across? You came across grief. But what if that person is in your good bucket or good list? Then all of it will be turned into pleasure. This is the story of your life. Isn't it? These are the events that happens in our lives. And then we try to flip from grief to pleasure. And then if something unfavorable happens, again, pleasure to grief. So in every single event, we have grief and then pleasure. So either grief or pleasure. And then we try to put ourselves, we try to do all the things that is possible to keep ourselves in pleasure. This part of the graph, the diagram. This part of the diagram. We try to keep ourselves contained in that part of the diagram. We try to push ourselves into that part of the diagram. We'll do anything. We'll go to great distance to get ourselves into this part. We'll try to do anything. When someone tells you that watching a flower garden is good, then You try to plan the trip and arrange a time out of your busy schedules, and then you go off to see a flower garden or a botanical garden. When someone says that, have you seen this movie? It's good. It's a new release. Have you listened to this song? Then suddenly you are okay. But as soon as they told you, do you have it? No, you don't have it. Then you fall into grief. Your mind falls into grief. Because now you don't have it with you. Now they tell you that if you go to this, you can find happiness. Because in our minds, we are always trying to search for happiness. That is what we are trying to do. That is what we are trying to achieve in our lives. Happiness. From the day that we were born, we were trying to search for something, and that something was happiness. That something was to free ourselves from this pressure in the mind. Just think about it. If I tell you, okay, so for children we give a punishment, very famous punishment for children. What is it? Time out in the corner. Or different people call it different names, but you either call it time out, or you ground them, or you tell them to sit in the corner of doom. So, what is that? Is what that is that you put a chair and you turn it towards a wall, and then you're not allowed to interact with anyone. You have to sit on that chair and then wait for let's say 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever the time that your parents say. If you're asked to stay for like 1 hour, 2 hours, can we? There's a very, very famous psychology experiment that had been done. I think it's called the marshmallow experiment. So Peter Martin is there. So I'll relate to you. I'll explain to you the best as I can remember, if my memory serves me right. So one day, so in this experiment, what they do is they keep a marshmallow on the table and then tell this child not to eat the marshmallow, and if you don't eat it when I come back, by the time I come back, if you haven't eaten it, then I'll give you another marshmallow. And then they leave the room and then watch through a camera what this child is up to. All sorts of different things happen in this room now. The child goes like, am I going to eat this? No, if I eat this, I won't get another marshmallow. Wait and be patient, and then you'll get another marshmallow. You'll get another reward. And then they go like, they take the marshmallow after a while, and then they go, they smell the marshmallow. One day I'll show you the video, maybe next week. They smell the marshmallow. They try to see that what it smells like, and then they keep it again. Because if I eat this, if something's missing in this marshmallow, if this looks bitten, then I'm not gonna get another marshmallow. There are some kids, I mean, this is repeated as a standard science experiment. It's always repeated. But in some kids, what they do is they just take the marshmallow and swallow it whole, because they couldn't bear it after some time. But some kids, they just go like, take the dust out of the marshmallow, the powder of the marshmallow, and then lick it to check what taste it is. So, why is this? Now, the event is marshmallows. And the view that they have about marshmallow is very good. Very tasty, yummy, good in a time like this. And they don't know that anyone's watching them. Although they're being watched by a CCTV camera or a two-way mirror. So they don't know that anyone's watching them, but the marshmallow is on the table and no one's there. But they have been told that if you don't eat this marshmallow, then you'll get another one. So you can have both of them. So when they're looking at the marshmallow, they become very uneasy. Why is that? Because they know about marshmallows. They have a view about marshmallows. Let's say that they don't have a view about marshmallows. They don't know what it is. What do you think they'll do? I mean, there's nothing else in the room to do. It's just that the child is here, the table's there, and in the middle there is a marshmallow. Let's say that they're explained that you'll get another one, but they don't know what it is. They know they can see the marshmallow, of course, but the experimenter says that you'll get another one of these, and she leaves if you don't eat it. Then, I mean, if you say that if you don't eat it, then he knows that it's something that you could eat. But let's say you'll get another one of these and you can have both of them. If you don't touch it or do anything with it. Then what do you think the child would do? Still out of curiosity, he'll try to at least smell it. And when he smells it, he catches the point that this is something edible. I mean, out of instinct. He'll catch that. And then it is up to him whether to eat it or not. But why can't they not eat it? Sorry. Why can't they stay without eating it? Because they have a view that marshmallows are good and yummy and it is something good at this time. So if that is the view, but there is a view that is opposing it, that is contradicting to it, what is that? That if I eat this, I wouldn't get another one. So they know the marshmallows are good and two marshmallows is better than one marshmallow. That is the other view that keeps on contradicting with this. But when time goes on, of course, so there's a scale of time for them. I feel like drawing a graph, but no, I'm not going to. So when time goes on, they feel like, I've been waiting here for now 5 minutes. I've been waiting here for 10 minutes. I've been waiting here for 15 minutes. And then it is a battle of views that goes inside this mind. In every single event, in any person, it's a battle of views that goes in every instant, in every instance. So when this battle of views are going inside the mind, then the views about marshmallows comes into his head. And this view about, which is contradicting to this view about marshmallow, which is, if I eat this, I wouldn't get two marshmallows. And two marshmallows are better than one. So this battle between the views goes on for a while. And then one view wins. So the child will, I mean, this mind will always act upon the view that wins. That is how it is all the time. The mind will always act upon the view that wins. Because there are lots of views that comes into your head. If I show you a flower, you'll tell me that this flower is a, maybe let's say it's a rose. So let's say it's this flower. I'm breaking the decoration every single day. So this is a rose, right? So you'll tell me that this flower is a rose. And this is, I don't know about flowers, but my sister will tell me all the details about this. But so she would go like, this is a rose and this is good and this is that, this and the other. And all the things about the flower, all the good things. And why people go watching this, looking at these in botanical gardens. Because when you see a lot of roses, you have a view that it's very pleasant. You see the neatness and the tidiness of a flower garden, and you feel very pleasant. You feel relaxed. Your mind feels calm. Why it feels calm is because you're in this state. Because you're in pleasure. All the things that is in a flower garden are arranged according to your good views. They don't contradict, and you don't fall into grief in the flower garden. But if you see, let's say, a dog has done his job on the road in the flower garden, then you get upset. Why? Because, I mean, everything was perfect in the flower garden. You were enjoying the views, you were enjoying everything. But then suddenly you see this, and then you go like, ew. Why is that? It's because suddenly your views got contradicted. Because you came to the flower garden thinking that it's a beautiful, serene, calm, peaceful place. But suddenly you have this dog poop. And you have that, and you see that, and then the view about the flower garden gets contradicted very quickly. Now it's not a nice flower garden. Now it's a very untidy. They haven't even cleaned it. Now all the opposing views comes into your head. It is always a battle between your views, when it comes to, when an event comes through this way. So if it's favorable, if it's good, if the view is about it is good, and then the event is good. That is how we feel. We don't feel that it is the mind that went from grief towards pleasure. We don't feel that. We always feel that the event, it's always tied with the event. That is what we feel. But unfortunately, it's not actually tied with the event. Because you can't tie anything with the event. Because event is something that happens due to causes. Single in time. Well, we talked about it. The time does not affect the event. It's just the causes. So an event is something that happens due to causes. It doesn't have anything to do with what you think about it. The event is an event that takes place in this world. That happens due to causes. So it doesn't actually have anything to do with what we think about it or what others think about it, because that's a mind. That's a mind experiencing an event. When a mind experiences an event, the mind has good views about it and bad views about it, all the views about that event. Not just that event, I mean, the mind has lots of views, and according to the event that you're experiencing, the views come into your head which are related to that event. So it is not wrong that views come into your head, but in those views you have a description saying that it is pleasurable. So when that description comes into your head with that view, then things get even worse. That's when wanting happens. Because just think about it, all the things that you have wanted in life, aren't they good? I mean, you wouldn't want a bad thing. Aren't they good experiences? Aren't they nice to experience? All the expectations that you have, all the wants that you have in life, all the wantings that you have had in life, aren't they good experiences? Don't you have a description saying that this will bring me pleasure, this will bring me happiness, in fact? Isn't that why you went on doing it? Let's say, going to some country, moving into some country. Isn't it good? Isn't it pleasurable? Isn't that why you went on to do it? Going to watch the movie. Isn't it good? So when that comes into your head, you have a description coming into your head along with it, saying that it is pleasurable. It will bring me happiness. It is very good to experience this. So when you go about to do that, then what happens is, as soon as that view comes into your head, then the mind is in uneasiness because now you don't have it. Let's say you want to watch a movie, but now you're at school, you're at work, you're in the office. Can you watch it? Well, technically you can, but you don't do that, right? Because in office hours, you work in the office. You when you're at work, you work. And you don't go about watching movies during work time. But just think about it. When you want to watch it, now you can't focus on your work either. Now you want to watch the movie, but currently you don't have it with you. When you want to watch it and you don't have it, what happens to your mind? You're in grief. And then you go home. Still, you don't have it. And then, let's say you have dinner. Still, you don't have it. And then, suddenly you turn on the TV and there's a power cut. So again, you don't have it. And then, after 1 hour, you waited. And then, after 1 hour, power came up. And then suddenly you turn on the TV and then you switch on to the channel or you put in the DVD or whatever that the movie's on. And then you start watching the movie. Now, it turned from grief to pleasure. Now we feel that, at the end of the day, finally, I got to watch the movie. But what about while watching the movie? So, now do we understand that when we, it depends on how we think about things. I mean, this shows that the event doesn't have anything to do with how we feel. So, while we are watching the movie, didn't we go through lots of spikes of, again, sad, pleasure, sad, pleasure, grief, pleasure, grief, pleasure. I mean, just think about it. How do you think the directors direct the movie? So when I took my drama courses, drama classes back then, so we were taught how to make a script, how to direct the movie, not a movie, but a drama, but I mean, the same theory applies. So first we have to actually create a problem. When you create a problem, it becomes a problem to the viewer, to the person who watches the movie. So first we create a problem. And when you create a problem, it becomes a problem to the person who's watching it. And then as soon as you're given a problem, what do you try to do? Try not to solve this. You have done it already. Now you have to do what the Swaminathan says, okay? Try not to solve this. You have done it already. Come on. So when you're given with a problem, when you're given with a challenge, what you do is you try to solve it because you feel that uneasiness inside your mind that I need to solve it. You feel that inside your head. I mean, just think about the when you were little, we used to play the truth or dare. You put a toss or something, and then you either play rock, paper, scissors, and then you go like truth or dare. And then if you pick a dare, then you're given a dare. I dare you to do this. I dare you to pick something from the litter, from the bin. And then in front of the whole class, you have to go and pick something from the bin. So why does a dare feels lots of, I mean, why do you feel like you have to do the dare? Because you're challenged. You're said that you can't do this. Try it. You can't do it. That's what you mean by a dare, right? I dare you. I dare you, you can't do that. I dare you to do this. So you feel challenged. You feel that you've been put down because you feel that, I mean, he thinks that I can't do it. When you feel challenged, then you try to get out of that challenge as soon as possible. So then when someone dares you, then you feel that, okay, I'll do it. You're going to do it. Just like that, when I give you this question, excuse me, you feel challenged. You feel that you have to solve this. So then you have solved it already. So just like that, that is how the directors watch, not watch, but direct the movie, because they know about the mindsets of people. They're good analysts of the minds. No, not the minds, but behaviors. So they know about how people behave, and therefore, when you're given a problem at the start of the movie, so first they introduce the characters, of course, and then they tell that this is this guy, this is this person, this is this person, and this is this person, and these are their roles. And then at the start, they introduce that by saying their names and showing the environment that they live in, and then they give you a challenge. They give you a problem. When that problem comes into your head, what do you do? You have a solution already, right? Let's say the villain comes and kidnaps a person. One of the good guys. The villain kidnaps one of the heroes. Now, what is your solution? There was one of my friends who was always on the villain's side. So at the start of the movie, it doesn't become a problem to him. Because he feels like, good. Because he was on the villain's side. And then towards the end of the movie, he's very sad because the hero always wins, right? Most of the movies. I mean, if he doesn't win in the first movie, then he wins in the second one, right? That is how it is. But he was always on the villain's side. So towards the end of the movie, he's very sad because the hero won. So that's a side story. But again, so to create a problem, so when they create a problem, it becomes a problem inside our minds. And then we try to solve it. We have a solution already. When the hero kidnaps the villain, when the villain kidnaps the hero, when the villain kidnaps the hero, or a good person, or let's say someone from their family, they kidnaps them. And then, what is your solution? Now everything has to come back to normal, right? Everything has to solve. And then this person has to come back, and then everything should be just as it started. Because they show you that this is the normal. And then they create a problem. As soon as they create a problem, now you want everything to go back to normal. And now you have a solution inside your head. Yes? So you want everything to come back to normal. You want that kidnapped person to come back to their family. And you have a solution now. Now what the directors do is that they keep you from showing that solution in the movie. As long as possible. They try to put in other events. And then they show you that the movie brings you very close to that solution and then breaks it again. And then again brings very close to that solution and then breaks it again. I mean, isn't this how movies have been created? They bring you very close to the solution because the solution is already inside your mind. And it's just that they're not showing it. You know that when this person is replaced back into their family, moved back into their family, then this is solved. But what they do is, they show you that they're coming close to that solution, and then something happens again. And then again, the hero goes into this villain's, the villain's place, and then he tried to sneak into that place. And then try to break in. But then the villain catches him. Because now you saw that the hero's very close to, he was very close to bringing this person back, and then suddenly the villain spots it. And then you go, why? So they try to keep you from achieving this solution or from seeing this or showing this solution in the movie. So then what they do in the movies is that they try to keep you from achieving they try to keep you from coming into that solution as much as possible. They try to keep you in that time for a very long period of time, and then put in other events that happens, and then at the end, they show you the solution. But very, very, very perfect directors, what they do is, they give you the solution at the end. They show you that everything's okay. They are back into normal. But then towards the last shot of the movie, they show that the villain is still alive. I mean, isn't this what they do? And then and then the movie's over. Everything goes black. And then they show you, expect the next movie coming up. The second edition, the second part. This is what they do in the movies. Because you have an expectation, they're playing with that. They give you a problem, you have a solution, they keep you away from the solution as much as possible, and then towards the end of the movie, they give you the solution. And now you're very pleased of it. You're very happy about it because now you got the solution. Now you have it. And now you feel that, okay, now this movie is very good. The more the thrill that they give you during that time of giving the solution or showing the solution to you and the time of creating the problem, the more thrill that they give you, you feel that it's a good movie. Because the more vexation that you feel, the more release that you feel. The more times they vex you, the more times they put you your mind into pressure and then release it, you feel that it's a good movie. When the frequency of that increases, you feel that, this is a good movie. That's why some people like to watch horror movies. Again, this doesn't apply to like every single person, but this is one reason why people like to watch horror movies. Because when you're threatened, you're actually scared while watching the horror movie because you don't know what will happen in the next time. You open a cupboard and then the ghost is in the cupboard. You look at the mirror and then the ghost is behind you. And then he keeps on coming close to you. And then when you look in front of you, then you look back and no one's there. And when you look in front of you, the ghost is in front of you. I mean, these are the things that happens in horror movies. So they try to bring up something very unexpected. Because now you have lots of possibilities of happening, right? And you don't know which one will happen. When that happens, then you're very scared. Because all of the possibilities that come into your head are favorable or unfavorable. Unfavorable. Let's say it's a dark room, and then you that person's looking at a mirror. And then he sees the ghost or the demon at the back of the room, through the mirror. When he looks back, there's no one there. And before him looking back at the mirror again, what are the possibilities that's inside your head? He could come in front of you. He could do something, either scream. I mean, there are many different possibilities. All of those are unfavorable. So you don't want them to happen. But then the director does this. Well, what the director does is they make it happen. And then you are scared. You freak out. You get very scared. And then they scare you the most. And they scare you throughout the movie. And then at the end, they release. And then you're relieved. And then you go like, that's a good horror movie. I was scared, you know. Then people coming out of the cinema saying that I was scared at that time, you know, when the demon got in front of the mirror. People come out talking like that. So the director is always playing with you. Try to watch a horror movie. I'm not suggesting that you watch, but if you watch a horror movie, muting the movie. Because what do you do when it's the most horror, when it's the most scariest part? You close your eyes and then you close your ears and then you slowly peek through your hand, don't you? Because you can't not watch it, but you want to watch it as well. So you want to watch it, but you can't actually watch it because you're scared. So you close your ears and then you close your eyes as well. And then you slowly peek through your hand and then try to watch what is happening. If you watch a horror movie without the sound, I've done this in my lay life. If you watched a horror movie without the sound, then, I mean, you wouldn't be very scared because it is the sound that affects your views as well. I mean, just think about it. If you're asked to walk on a street, let's say this street from the monastery, let's say to let's say the supermarket that's over there. If you're asked to walk on that street during the daytime, you wouldn't have a problem, would you? There's no problem with that. But if you're asked to walk from the monastery to that supermarket in the nighttime, in the dark, let's say you don't have any animals or threats like that because there are wild boars as well on this place. But let's say, don't get scared. So let's say that, I mean, there's no animals or snakes or anything like that, any threat like that, no thieves, no robbers, but still you're scared to walk, right? Not now, but back then, let's say, in a dark road. Let's say there aren't thieves or robbers or anyone who would harm you, and no snakes, no animals who could harm you, and you're asked to walk. Can you? But you know very clearly that it is the same things that were there when there was light are there now. The same things that was there when there were light. I mean, the same things are there at night. It's just that the light is off. It's just that the sun is not there. But you have the same things. What has changed? So what scares you is the views that you have about that environment. That when you're in that environment, then the views that comes into your head are very unfavorable. This could happen, this could happen, this could happen. Someone might hurt me. But if we take someone out of it, then you think about all the ghosts and the spirits and the demons who could come and hurt you. You think about all those unfavorable things. And that is why you get scared to walk. But why you're not scared during the daytime? Because you can see. But mark my words that if there's a demon at night or a spirit or a ghost at night, they're always there, if there is, even at daytime. If there's a ghost that's there, then does he go on a vacation during daytime? Does he go on leave? Is it off-peak time for him? No, he's there. He's there during daytime as well, if he's there during the nighttime. So now you see, it's not the ghost that's scaring you. It's the views that are in your head. Due to those views, your mind falls into this grief. And since you don't know what will happen, then you're very scared. The fear comes in. So always keep in your mind that it is the views that always affect. Is there a time that I have to finish the sermon today? Yes? What time do I have to? 9:10, 9:15. Okay, thank you. So it is the views that are in your mind that affects it. Because you have views saying that this is pleasurable, this is not pleasurable, this is favorable, this is not favorable. And due to those views, what happens is all the favorable views will bring you a wanting. And then you want that to happen in your life, but when that doesn't happen, you're in grief. When that happens in your life, you call it pleasure, but actually, there is fear tagged along with pleasure. Because pleasure is just at one instance. But then comes fear. Because now just think about it. Why are you scared to walk in the dark? When you think about it, let's say, I mean, you can take the worst case scenario as well. Because someone might hurt me. And are you hurt right now? Physically? You're not. So, you don't like someone hurting you. And someone hurting you is in your good list or the bad list? Bad list. And therefore, you don't like someone hurting you. And therefore, you're scared because you're not hurt right now. So, you're scared that someone might hurt you. That happens because you want to not get hurt. I'm not talking about physical or Or that, I mean, when you have a disease or illness, you shouldn't get medication because you don't want to not get hurt. But I'm talking about the mind here. Mentally, you have a bias towards getting hurt or not. Of course you have. We all have, right? A mental bias towards getting hurt or not. But this is not talking about physical bias in the sense that, I mean, physically you don't have biases, but this is not talking about physical damage in any sort of way. Because just think about it. Okay, I'll take the example of when the Lord Buddha was proceeding on alms one day. So Devadatta Thero, he sent this big elephant called Nalagiri to his way. So he had the intention to kill the Lord Buddha. So he sent Nalagiri towards the Lord Buddha, thinking that at least because he charged him. First he made him very high by giving him alcohol, and then he sent the elephant towards the Lord Buddha's way. So the Lord Buddha was proceeding on, I think, arms or proceeding somewhere with few hundred Arjuna-nances. And then when this Nalagiri was approaching the Lord Buddha, he was running very fast. The monks who were at the back of Lord Buddha, I think he was Venerable Ananda. So I think he stepped in front of the Lord Buddha said that, nothing should happen to the Lord Buddha, I will step in front of you. And the Lord Buddha said that, Nalagiri has a problem with me, not anyone else. So let me go. So what I want to emphasize is that at this point, there are a lot of Arjuna-nances at the back as well. They know that the Nalagiri is charged. And what happens when a charged elephant runs towards you? put aside the elephant. What happens if a car is approaching you very fast? If it hits you, then you get seriously damaged. You could even get close to your death as well. So if something like that is approaching, don't the Arjuna-nances know that if this elephant goes through us, then we would die? They know that. We would get seriously damaged. They know that. What do you think the Arjuna-nances did back then? So you know that an Arjuna-nance is someone who accepts anything, accept any event in life. What do you think they did? So there's no description of what happened, but according to what I know from my teachers and of the mindset of an Arjuna-nance, so I don't think they would have just walked. They would have moved out of the way. Because they wouldn't think that, it's just Nalagiri who's coming towards my way, and then, kill me, Nalagiri. they wouldn't go like that. Because they are very intelligent. If there's a snake on the path that you're walking, I wouldn't think that an Arjuna-nance would just keep on walking. Because he knows to avoid the snake. And also, he has in his mind that if I avoid the snake and then live for he lives for another 50 or 30 years. If he does that, then it's a great benefit to this whole world. He knows that as well. And also, he knows the thing that we talked about in the last sermon, that he knows that if he's a burden to this world, he can leave at any point. See, that shows that the Arjuna-nances don't have any preference. But if they have the chance to live, they would live, because that would, I mean, others would benefit out of it. Not that they want to live. But they wouldn't want to get killed either. I mean, why would they just walk towards the elephant when they have the other option of walking, I mean, walking out of the way? It's not because they're scared. It's because they don't want to get killed. I mean, in the sense that, not this won't, but, I mean, when, if they got killed, then, I mean, the things that could happen through them to this world would not happen. They know the difference between that and their death. They know very clearly how much of a benefit someone could experience by associating them. They know that. And therefore, out of compassion towards other beings, they walk in another direction. Or they try to avoid. If they have to run, they would run. they would not think that, because then it will be selfish, right? Because they have done all the things that they need to do. They have fulfilled their destiny. They have it in Nibbana. If they think that, I mean, I have it in Nibbana, then I don't need to care about others. I mean, they wouldn't think about that, but, I mean, they wouldn't think like that. I mean, it would be thinking like that if they walk towards Nalagiri, right? I mean, just think about it. In your minds, let's say there's a snake. Do you want Guru Hamdru to walk towards the snake or avoid the snake? I mean, let's say that you see Guru Hamdru or Nayaka Hamdru or any other Swami Nahanse walking towards the snake. Wouldn't you do anything possible to get them avoid the snake? Why? Because you know that every second that Guru Hamdru lives, something great happens to this world. You know that every single second that Swami Nahanse lives, something great happens to this world. And therefore, you don't want them walking towards a snake. So that is the same thing that they think. They think about others. And then they avoid the snake. Because maybe for them, they don't need to avoid the snake. Because they have completed their job. They have completed Nibbana. They have achieved Nibbana. For an Arithun Mahamsi. So they don't necessarily need to avoid the elephant. But they walk in another way because they know how beneficial their living to this world is. But again, they also know that their living in this world is a burden to others. They also know that. So if the circumstances will promote them to leave this world, then they would very happily leave this world. That is the mindset of an Arithun Mahanse. So they are very happy to do anything because they accept anything. Because they don't have this. They have the views, of course, but none of those views have the description saying that this is pleasurable. They still have the views. But none of them say that it is pleasurable, and I mean, this doing this and experiencing this is good. None of those views have the description, the small print. They don't have it. But typically, a view will always be tied with that. Pleasurable, joyful, and very good to experience it. A view will always be tied with that. Okay, so keep that in your mind, and we'll discuss why the view is tied with that and how to get rid of it in the coming weeks. So I think the time that's given to us is finished today, because we have Dakini as well. So when you're participating in all of that, the glass is full. So always think that the glass is half full, Because sometimes, maybe as ladies, you might not get to do some certain merits. So you won't get to usher the Swaminarayanas and the Muthukudas and the pearl umbrellas and wash the Swaminarayanas' feet. So you might feel that, why can't we do this? But the glasses are full. You have other opportunities as well. And also, you can rejoice in the things that happen. So we have been trained in the sense that we always think in that way. Because just think about it. I mean, you tell us that you can't wash the Swaminarayanas' feet, you can't usher the Swaminarayanas on the Muthukuda, and just think about it, we can't even bring the Buddha Puja. We do the Buddha Puja, but can we make the Buddha Puja and bring it? Can we wash the Swaminarayanas' feet? We do that when you're not here. So, can we hold the pearl umbrella to the Swaminarayanas? For Dakinu, we can't. But we do that when you're not here. So we won't think that, oh, these people are here, so we can't even do this. But we rejoice in every single merit act that happened from the start of the Parahara towards the end of the Akineyo. I mean, just think about how compassionate you are. One day, Nayaka Hamdur was discussing with me. He told me that, Sudarsana, look at this, all these devotees, how compassionate they are. They work throughout their lives and they spend their hard-earned money and then they take an atapirikara. And they just don't stop there. Just think how compassionate they are. They come and show it to the Swaminarayanas to rejoice. That's what you do, right? When you take an atapirikara, what do? You don't just go and offer it. What you do is, you go and show it to the Swaminarayanas. And then the Swaminarayanas rejoice in the merits that you've done. Rejoice in that atapirikara. So Nayakandra was telling me that, just think about how compassionate these devotees, these people are. They don't have to do that. They could just go and earn the merits for themselves. But they come towards us, they come towards the Swaminarayanas, and also ask us to rejoice. So we rejoice in it. So from the moment it starts, the parahara starts, we rejoice in everything that we can see from the corner of our eyes. So I want you all to rejoice like that in every single thing that happens in here and anywhere. Any good act, you can rejoice. Okay, so we'll transfer the merits and conclude the sermon for today. Let us take a moment to transfer the merits you have acquired throughout the day by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, observing the precepts and engaging in various meritorious deeds throughout the day. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teachings, and with immense gratitude let us transfer these merits to the bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Lord Buddha and have passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage as in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let's also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves to the betterment of all sentient beings. Let's not forget that among the mother monks and nuns resident in our local temples and nunneries, who have always been by our side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let's also take a moment to transfer these merits to our teacher, Guru Swaminarayanas, and all the other monks resident at this monastery, as well as the Anagarikas and Anagarika communities attached to the monastery. Let's also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the people who take great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Lord Buddha, be that by sharing these sermons with others or inviting others to join them. May by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plains. May by the power of these merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the devotees, friends of the monastery, who for the sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, and to those of you who have provided the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, and to those of you who have provided their know-how and extended their well wishes. May by the power of these merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our mothers, fathers, brothers and sisters, our uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, and to anyone and everyone who has helped us, supported us, assisted us in any way, shape or form. And by the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments, overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the devas, brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Sambhu Sasane. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all our guardian deities who keep watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. And by the power of these merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all who have been our friends, families and acquaintances in this infinitely long journey of samsara. Let's take a moment to transfer these merits to them. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the people who lost their lives in natural calamities, such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides and pandemics, reminding ourselves that among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this infinitely long journey of samsara. Let's take a moment to transfer these merits to them, and by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plains. May by the power of these merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let us all make a resolve that may by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds and thousands of arahants on this blessed land, and may by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day and throughout our whole samsara, may you and I, and everyone who has helped make these programs a success, become an arahant nuhanse, or an arahant meni nuhanse, in this very life and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. Now the Mahasangha will transfer their blessings to you. Raga ginnan midatnva, dvesha ginnan midatnva, moha ginnan midatnva, Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetnva. Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetnva. Mama dasya luloka siyalu satmayo nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetnva. Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetnva. Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetnva. Raga gini niveva, dvesha gini niveva, moha gini niveva, nivan sapa labeva, nivan sapa labeva, nivan sapa labeva, nivan sapa labeva. துன்வன்கே சுவிசனந்த மகாகுணபெலின் சீர்லோக சீல சத்தியம் நிப்பான பரம சுகின் சுகித தரவேத்தா சாது சாது சாது.